From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Auto executives from Detroit's Big Three go back to Capitol Hill and plea for a lifeline to federal lawmakers. And could a new bailout proposal help curb home foreclosures? Our Reporters Roundtable is here to look at the week's top headlines. And joining us today are Sarah Webster, the automotive editor for the Detroit Free Press, and Theola LeBay DeBose, a staff writer for the Washington Post. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thank you, Tony.
Let's begin with this. There isn't enough support in the U.S. Senate right now to pass a bailout. The heads of General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler drove to the nation's capital this week to plea for $34 billion in loans from the federal government. They didn't fare so well on their first trip, and this time are coming with concessions and hat in hand. Theola, are their prospects for success any better now?
There was the statement today by President Bush basically saying that there needs to be some action taken. Bush has always been very strategic about when he weighs in on these issues, especially when his days in office are really dwindling. But I think that obviously lawmakers will take that statement, however brief, to heart. And I think that obviously part of this is theater, but part of this is also really asking the hard questions, because we are talking about billions of public dollars.
Sarah, let's talk about your paper, because it has dedicated an entire front page to editorials on the auto industry. And I'd like to also ask you about the reaction to all of this from the people who are directly impacted, the people in Detroit. Now, your paper's website ran an automated cartoon today, which I think is pretty instructive about the way that Detroiters are feeling. It starts with the voices of someone asking for money for a bailout. But the irony is, it isn't the automakers, it's the U.S. government coming to the automakers for help. And the time in the cartoon is 1941, right after Pearl Harbor. Let's listen.
Look, we know you're in a death struggle with Japan, but you're asking for an umpteen billion-dollar commitment from us. How do we know you won't be back in a couple of months, asking for even more? We have no assurances you'll ever pay us back. Besides, the fix you're in is a result of your own failure to plan ahead.
So, sorry, Congress. We're not going to retool our factories to build tanks and planes for you. Japan's your problem.
So, Sarah, do the people there feel that they are owed this assistance?
I don't think there's any sense of entitlement. I think that there are so many feelings here right now, as you might imagine, and one of those is just fear. If the federal government doesn't do this, I think the people in Michigan, not just Detroit, have seen the future. We've seen what is yet to come for this country. I mean, if you look at a map, and we have an interactive map on our website that I encourage people to look at, you can click state by state and see how many jobs. I mean, you're talking about really decimating the whole Midwest, California, Texas, places where there are just thousands and thousands of automotive jobs. Even Alaska has 2,500 automotive jobs. And I think that people here are just scared that maybe Americans have forgotten how threaded into the fabric of life the auto industry is.
Well, Theola, this morning new job numbers were released. In November, more than 500,000 jobs were cut. The unemployment rate is the highest it has been in 34 years. It stands at 6.7% currently. How much are workers willing to sacrifice to keep their jobs?
It's a very, very tough climate right now. There are some holiday parties coming up for me personally at the newspaper, and the word that I am hearing a lot is potluck, not expecting that someone is going to come and bail you out and, you know, throw some sort of lavish gathering. I think that the fear that obviously folks working in the industry in the Midwest, people have, different aspects of that fear in their personal lives. And so what you're going to see is, and we have already seen this, retail shopping is down, Walmart only really is up, cash is king all of a sudden. The fear is really widespread in large and small ways.
You know, Sarah, we heard just today the head of the UAW saying that he is willing to go back to the table to give concessions so long as everyone is at the table. In his words, that would include the suppliers to the auto industry as well. Do you think that labor is ready to really give back significantly in order to get through this crisis?
Well, labor has already given back significantly, and even on, you know, a few days ago, they held a press conference and gave back even more, even without the automakers directly asking them to. They have repeatedly given back, and right now, the wage difference is actually very small between the UAW represented workers and those who are employed by the foreign automakers in America. It's about $4 a difference in some places. I think that everyone's willing to sacrifice to make sure that this industry doesn't fail. And I think it's also important to note that even in the cartoon that you were sharing, that the government has come to Detroit many times in our past and asked for Detroit's help, asked the help of these industries. And these industries have stepped up and they've helped make this country better. And now Detroit's really asking for a hand. And if the government gives that hand, I think that it is an investment in America. Our full-page editorial today says invest in America because we believe here, and we believe it deeply, that if that money is given to Detroit, we can actually be part of the economic recovery that this country can have. And we think that it could be robust again.
Let's move from the crisis on wheels to the crisis at the curb. I'm talking about the mortgage crisis now. Top officials at Treasury are pushing a plan to subsidize mortgage rates at 4.5% for 30-year mortgages. They hope that this will trigger home buying and ease the housing markets, but this low interest rate would only apply to people with good credit. It would also not apply to people who would like to refinance their homes. Let me ask you, Theola, what would this impact be on people who are in danger of losing their homes if this were to take place?
It's a very difficult thing to say now, and I think the reason why there's been so much discussion on this important topic about foreclosures, saving homes, obviously for the economic reasons in terms of being intricately tied to the recovery of the nation. But essentially, when you have the government really entering into this sector, you have the federal government essentially trying to figure out how much they decide who is worthy to have a low interest loan, whether it's refinanced, whether it's someone who has good credit. And those are very difficult questions because that's the reason why the private sector is private. That's the reason why you go to a broker or you apply directly to Fannie Mae. But all of that system has been turned upside down. And so I think what you're seeing is the government really struggling in their role to sort of figure out how are we to set some guidelines that essentially do not punish people for paying their mortgages and then do not perhaps, you know, give people incentive not to pay?
There's one other topic I'd like to get as we bring reporters, our reporters roundtable to a close for this week, and I'm going to address it to you, Sarah. It's this. President-elect Obama's cabinet, he's nominated so far 3 women, 2 African-Americans. He's also nominated the most prominent Hispanic politician, New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, for Secretary of State. But here's where I want to go. Xavier Becerra, a congressman from L.A., is Obama's choice for U.S. trade rep. But unlike Attorney General nominee Eric Holder, Holder, Becerra has some political baggage from a controversial presidential pardon during the Clinton administration. The question is, who do you see of the cabinet picks so far who may have trouble with their confirmation?
Well, I think it's, you know, difficult to say. It really depends on the makeup of, you know, the congressional leadership and, you know, who they want to go after. I mean, sometimes, you know, they just let things sail through and other times they decide they're going to, you know, really go after people. I think in this case, it's, you know, the trade representatives, if Obama's trade policies are to roll the clock back, I think that members of Congress may be resistant to that.
What do you see, Theola? Are you hearing names that are going to be red flags? Eric Holder is one that we've heard publicly so far, at least. I don't know if there are others that you've heard.
The buzz in Washington isn't about specific names, but, you know, every year or every 4 years, it just holds true that there is always a dud. I mean, that's just sort of like straight math, like a math problem. If you've got 12 people, someone is going to mess up. Someone else may not make it, so on and so forth. But I think still, certainly, even though the campaign is over and that Obama essentially is splitting time between Washington and Chicago, there's still a bit of a honeymoon in terms of, oh, this person got named today. Isn't that great? Oh, that person got named today. And so I think perhaps, you know, going into January, maybe after the official swearing in, obviously, which is sort of, you know, here we're kind of gearing up to cover this big event. I think that's where you'll see, once things get down to the hard work of governing, where some of those issues are possibly going to come up.
Really quickly, in 10 seconds or less, is he more centrist than we thought he was as a candidate now that he is naming people and giving an idea of what direction he's going in?
I think that that is still in the eye of the beholders.
Thea LaSera, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Sarah Webster, the automotive editor for the Detroit Free Press, and Theola LaBey-DeBose, a staff writer for the Washington Post. She joined us from the Post studios in Washington, D.C.